Welcome to the Natural History Cupboard. Come on in.
And welcome back to the Natural History Cupboard podcast, the place where the weird and wonderful parts of the natural world come together. This week, you probably noticed there's a slight difference in our audio because, well, we're on the move. We're going mobile. You join myself and sound recordist slash all-round amazing person and wife, Paris, who's here with me.
Hello.
In the in my car as we head towards Erin to go and pick him up. This week's episode is going to be a little bit different. We're going for a bit of an explore. We're going to go fossil hunting and take you guys with us. Now, how many times have we been fossil hunting within the last couple of years, Paris?
Not many.
Yeah, it's about two, I think.
Yep.
So it's been a long time, and we basically are going to go for a fossil hunt, take you guys with us. Now, we're on our way to go and pick up Erin, so we're winding our way through the little country lanes between us and him. And then we're going to keep going a little bit further. We're going to go from North Devon to North Somerset, to a place called Watchet.
Watchet.
Indeed. Which is just next to Minehead in Somerset. A really good fossil hunting site. And hopefully, if the weather's with us, it's looking okay, we'll be able to take you along as we go fossil hunting. So it's a really nice little part of the coast. So we'll see what Erin has to say in a minute when he's awoken by us pulling him into the car. So let's go from there. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Right.
Little bit delayed. I turned the lights on downstairs this morning when I got in. When I came down, and it shorted the electricity, so I had to find which bulb. I didn't know which bulb I'd hit. Not paying attention because it's that early in the morning. Click, 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 click. Which bulb is it that's gone out? It's the outdoor one. So the one that's on the porch.
Well, there you go.
Are you recording?
It's that authenticness that you only get with completely surprising someone that you're recording a podcast episode in a car.
It's as Gareth can no doubt attest. Getting up in the morning and function is not my strong suit. I got up on time, which meant something was going to go wrong. Just happened to be me blindly turning lights on.
Fair enough. Right.
Do you know it's quicker to go out Minehead that way from here?
Okay.
Do you know that?
Did not, but we know now.
This will take us out to Simmons Bath.
Right, now there I know where I am.
Oh, mate, look at our mascots. We've got Deadpool, Moon Knight, Beast. Is that Storm? No, straight on, buddy.
So, yeah, you joined us in my car, which has got, the Lego minifigures in the front.
I should have brought Venom with me.
Currently have got, Beast, Deadpool, unofficial Lego, but he's been sort of unofficially with me in the car for a very long time. Moon Knight and Storm and Werewolf by Night, as well as my bobbing terrapin head, which they've been with me for a while now. So I quite like having them as my little in-car mascots. Gotta have something. That way you know, you can tell your car apart. Better than having this stupid little flag. So, you're awake.
I am awake, yep.
We're on the road. And we should hopefully get there within enough time. Technically, low tide was about 3-ish hours ago now, so we'll be there in perfect time to do hopefully a bit of fossil hunting in Watchet.
Watchet.
In fact, you need to tell people about how when I took you and your other half there the first time, how you completely and utterly outstripped my ability to find any fossils. Of any kind and found certainly the finds of the day.
Probably my partner Atta got the best find. I believe it was a vertebrae from a thylacinosaur of some variety.
Yeah,
a
tiny little marine reptile.
Yeah. And the remarkable thing about it was, firstly, the beauty of the vertebrae itself is like perfectly fossilised, completely undamaged. But it was also it was set in rock that was speckled with iron pyrite, fool's gold. So the light hits it and it really just makes the fossil pop. But we found, I mean, separately and together, we found all manner of ammonites and parts of ichthyosaurs. I don't know what you've already told them, Gareth, but it's a beach with a lot of history.
I haven't. I've only really said that we're heading to watch it. So
okay.
If you don't mind, I'll take you back a little bit. So if you go back to, I believe, 1938, they were actually testing. This is a time when they thought the next war would be basically swooping planes and anyone on the ground had no chance. I think it was the year 1938 that just off the cliffs of Watchet, they were testing ground-to-air missile cannons. And there's fantastic video on YouTube showcasing this footage. I think it took them 7 shots before they hit the plane and it went into the sea. I don't know if they ever recovered it. It was a biplane. I don't know if they ever recovered it, but that's pretty cool. It's also it's also historically important it's got a Bronze Age hill fort, I believe.
Wasn't aware of that. Where's
Dore
that?
Dore Castle. It's not far off of the, I think it's called Dore Castle. It's not far off of the beach. Originally, that's where the Watchet settlement was before it became Watchet. I think it was called Wacked or Wicked.
Wicked settlement.
Yeah, in Old Celtic. In Old Celtic, I think it's Gwo Coed or something. It means under the forest or something like that, under the wood or something. But then it became, the settlement moved from the castle down to where it is now, like on the shore with the harbour. During the Saxon times, after the Saxons took it from the Bretons, the Saxons renamed it Wacked or Wicked or whatever it is, whatever it was that eventually in our tongue became Watchet.
Why couldn't they have been called Wicked?
They should have been called Wicked. It was supposed to be one of Alfred the Great's strongholds against the Vikings, but then it was the 10th century, I think it was, the Vikings actually did invade and conquer it. I believe it was somewhere between there and North Devon is where one of the Viking kind of men that went on to become legend, Ubba, is where he was killed. Ubba, I can't remember if he's meant to be one of Ragnar's sons or not, left here. Yeah, so there's that. Just a point of interest, we've just driven past a pub that is completely run off of a generator.
And it's also completely invisible. I didn't even see it.
No, yeah, it was in the fog a bit, but it's completely run off generator. It's a bit of a... It's one of those North Devon odd...
Like, only appears when there's fog up on Exmoor.
Yeah. So where did I get to? Oh yeah, the Vikings invaded it and took it over in the 10th century. But then if you go back even further to the time where we're interested,
you don't even have to go, you go back about 20,000 years and there's actually Ice Age deposits around there.
I didn't know that bit.
Yeah, there's Ice Age deposits, and quite often there have been cave lion and rhino bits and pieces.
Oh, you're telling me that? Don't watch it.
Not on the beach where we're going, but on occasional streams and that, there have been all sorts of bits found in these sort of Ice Age gravels that have appeared.
So I've just to, sorry to interrupt, but just to kind of narrate what's going on here. I've directed Gareth up over from my house up over onto Exmoor, which is technically a shortcut rather than going anywhere else. However, we're having to drive really slowly because the fog is so thick.
If we're never heard from again, you know what's happened.
It's like the Black Pearl just crashed on Exmoor, half expecting like half zombified pirates to come out of the bushes any minute.
Where's the rum?
Where we're going, our point of interest is, I believe it's there's a fault there that's, you've got Triassic on one side and Jurassic on the, a little further up.
Yes, it's called the Rhaetian Penarth series. The Penarth series is in the Triassic, and the Rhaetian is in the, no, sorry, the Rhaetian is the Triassic, and the Penarth series is in the Jurassic. Penarth is in Wales, which is directly across from where we'll be. To think of the geography of that place during the Triassic boundary, we're looking at about 205 million years ago. So it's at the point where the Jurassic is just starting just transitioning into the Jurassic. You've got where we'll be is deep open water. We would be off the coast.
It would be about 30 foot under the water's surface, isn't it?
Even more than that.
Some of the
animals that would have been living there would have been monsters.
Deep sea then.
Yeah. But if you go across the water to South Wales around Cardiff, which is not a million miles away from where we'll be.
No.
In fact, it's about 20-odd miles straight across, but you get very wet in the process. You'll encounter areas of rock from the same period, what would have been river mouths and swamps and very shallow areas, and it's where the dinosaur Pantodraco was, not Pantodraco,
Draco
sorry,
Rex.
Draco Rex was found by some friends of a friend who were also fossil hunters who were hunting on that side. So it appears that it's the same habitat, just deeper, well, the same place, but just deeper habitats of water and everything. Mm. We're going to be looking for ichthyosaurs and plesiosaurs and marine reptiles when they really start to take off. In fact, the largest known marine reptile that possibly rivals the blue whale, if not bigger, which is known as the Ostcliff ichthyosaur, from Ost, which is just outside of Bristol. If you've ever been over the suspension bridge that goes from Bristol to South Wales, the cliffs are literally at the base of that bridge, and it's quite odd fossil hunting around there, because you've just got this giant bridge. All you can hear is cars above you, but the cliffs are massive, and the bits that they found from there, plus the bits that have been found from a place called Lilstock, which is further up in Somerset, have combined from the same animal to give this new estimated size of being bigger than a blue whale. So potentially the largest creature that has ever existed was swimming around in the seas that we're going to be looking in. I could easily believe that. It was a cairn.
Yeah.
And a bird of prey of some sort just flew off that way.
It was a corvid, that one.
Was it?
Yeah. I didn't catch the tail
didn't
to be able to...
Well, it is certainly very foggy. You can barely see a thing in front of us. I'm waiting to see a red deer.
It would be nice. I have not seen red deer in this area. I have seen them... Ironically, I've seen... There you go, there's a group of corvids. You've got jackdaws there. Ironically, I have seen them where you picked me up.
Oh,
not
right.
Actually,
well,
out
outside
here.
Of your house.
As On my doorstep, no, but from my dining room and lounge, and in fact the two bedroom windows, I look across that valley onto that field that is behind the other houses, and yeah, I've seen them up there. Also, to the right, on the other kind of the other hill, there is a there's a field that's often full of horses, and you find deer up there too. You hear them during the rut, which is October, I think. And
are we at the end of that rut, I think, aren't we?
We are. You can still hear them every now and then, but certainly not as intense as you can through October. You can hear the males roaring. It's an incredible sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, now is the time to go up and find antlers. It would be cool to try and do that, actually.
I've always wanted a set of red deer antlers. I've got a set of, weirdly, over the years, just from animals in zoos and that, fallow deer antlers, which are impressive, but they're not the big sort of spiky, tined antlers that the red deer have.
Mm.
And I've got somewhere, weirdly, that I got given from an antiques fair, a pair of Nile lechwe horns.
Oh, that's interesting.
And yeah, antique ones. It took me the longest time to figure out what species they were from, based on the horns.
I have worked with
not being much of a hoofstock person.
I've not worked with Nile lechwe. I have worked with I've definitely worked with red lechwe. There is a issue with red lechwe in captivity in the UK in that someone worked out how to unlock the white gene, and so now we're right here. So yeah, every now and then the captive population in the UK throws up these white antelope. Obviously, to get that there's been a certain amount of inbreeding, not in particularly modern times, as in our career. I would suspect it was before that.
Yeah.
Because of how prevalent it is.
We're back. We've had a bit of a gap in talking, I suppose. Well, on mic, as it were. We've discussed everything from
my favourite X-Men.
I was going to say favourite X-Men, the collections of Lego, the rights and wrongs of the fact that there
dangerous
are pheasants dog. Everywhere,
oh,
dangerous dogs.
Yeah,
basically, we've gone and thrown everything controversial off mic, I suppose.
And solidified our friendships, as we've all agreed.
Oh, is that why we threw Aaron out? No, he's still good.
Banged up, though.
Interestingly enough, we've just gone through a town that is always on the way. I say town, village, hamlet?
Village.
Village.
Too big for
where multiple times I've driven through, and you've said the same thing as well. There's a bloke who wanders around with two umbrella cockatoos, either on his shoulder, or you said you saw them sitting on the fence.
I saw one
as them out and about, and that's pretty cool. We're also, around here somewhere, is England's tallest tree, which is in one of these forests around us here. So, I mean, we could go looking for that, or we could go fossil hunting.
This is this road. I always enjoy coming down this road because if you ignore the fields on the left as you're driving this way, it does feel like somewhere in, like, you know, the trees kind of feel like you're somewhere in Northern Europe or, you know, Canada or that kind of area.
It does on the right hand side of the road because that's all pine trees and everything. On the left hand side, it's all oak and
broadleaf and stuff. There is some pines up there then.
And then, yeah, I suppose you look over the other side of the valley, it's all very nice, actually. Yeah, that's really quite nice, dense broadleaf forests with pines mixed in. So, interestingly enough as well, this area is, I think, an ice age, I've managed to get Siri to wake up as well. My phone is deciding to listen to what we're doing. Thank you, Jeff Bezos, is it? I don't know, one of them.
Jeff Bezos is Amazon.
Oh, all right. Not. He's probably listening as well. So, we're now coming into the very odd little town of...
Steve Jobs. That's not the name of the town, that's the guy that did the Apple, isn't it?
Yes.
The odd town of Steve
the
Jobs.
The odd town of Steve Jobs. We're coming into the town of...
Dunster, isn't it?
Dunster, that's the one. Yeah. You completely took it out of my head there. Dunster, which is an odd little town. It's
historic, isn't it?
Yeah, this is one that's got Dunster Castle as well, which is out on the road. We're basically by Minehead now. And Dunster's got this really long little, very narrow high street that you have to navigate with every other person passing to get through. But it's a really nice little village. It's properly nestled within the hills on either side of it because the trees almost overhang the village.
It's a pretty little village, isn't
it? It's all cobbled on the sides as well, which would just irritate me. Having to walk down an actual cobbled footpath. And that's right, yeah. This
first world problems,
is,
that one.
Yeah, oh yeah. This is the best feature is in the middle of Dunster where the church is, there is actually such a narrow part there has to be
traffic lights
to control people going from one side of the village to the other. So for anyone who lives in any other part of the world that doesn't have narrow streets like Britain, that will seem rather odd. I can certainly say that driving on like an Australian road, the whole village is probably the width of an Australian road.
And some of these original doors are about 4 foot high as well, so that should date some of the buildings for you.
It's one of those ones that I bet you probably get quite a few tourists who go, oh my god, is this Harry Potter land? Or something along those lines.
Is this the Prancing Pony where Gandalf met the met Thorin Oakenshield?
Definitely.
Before the company of 13 left the Shire.
We joke, but there's some genuinely nice pubs around these places that are very oldie worldy, but
and nice food
proper
too.
Proper little pubs.
Proper job.
So we're now out of the fog. We've been out of the fog for a while, but we're now down to the other side of Exmoor. We've gone up and over, and we're now on the coast by Minehead.
So we are wedged right now between... It's a really interesting place, actually, because you've got, as Gareth said, we come down out of Exmoor. You've got Exmoor, you've got this history that I very briefly summarised. There's much more to it than what I said earlier on. You've got, you know, that Jurassic coastline to our left on the coast there. You've got Quantox around here as well, which is a really nice place if you like your cycling and walking. Really interesting kind of place.
We've also got coming up a lovely little zoo, which if we had enough time, we'd go there as well.
Is that Tropiquaria?
That's Tropiquaria.
I have to say, I've never been there. I don't think I've ever been there.
So Tropiquaria is an odd looking place, and it's odd for a couple of very good reasons, actually. It is run, or the heating for Tropiquaria, comes entirely off the excess heat produced by the relay station for BBC Wales. So because of the fact that there are gigantic mountains in the middle of Wales, they have to have a relay station that will relay the radio signal coming out of Cardiff, which will then bounce off this relay station, which you'll see in a minute when we come past it, which then goes up and off to the other side of Wales so that you can actually hear Radio Wales in other parts of Wales. Ironically, we get a better reception for Radio Wales here in Somerset than you will in North Wales. And I can say that with all certainty because you basically can't get it there. The mountains in the way don't help. But that's what that relay station is there to do, is to bounce BBC Wales back that way. All of the excess heat that comes off the transmitter for it is then basically funneled out into this large hall, which has been set up with loads of plants in it. There's macaws and various other different animals in there. In fact, there are free-roaming geckos. I know that because I took them some geckos once to release out into their hall. So they've got Madagascan day geckos and a couple of other species of day gecko. I can't remember which ones I took them now. But the whole thing runs heating wise off that. And the building itself is this old sort of 1950s, 1960s, very, very concrete, ugly looking building. But on the inside, it's wonderful. They've also got like a history, like a little museum attached about the history of the radio station itself, or the radio relay station itself. And when going there to drop those things off years ago, speaking to the owner of the place, he said that he's not the only animal collection that is powered by untraditional means. There is supposedly a French crocodile park that is powered, or heat-wise, the entire building is powered, the entire building is heated, by the waste water from a nuclear power plant. Now, I know what you're thinking. Reptiles, nuclear power plant, nothing can go wrong there.
This series last night.
Nothing can go wrong there, but it's the heat that comes off the water that's used to cool the radioactive material. It doesn't actually interact with the radioactive material. It basically is just the cooling water, but it comes out at such a hot temperature that they use the fact that this collection is there, it heats the entire collection's enclosures, which is absolutely insane. But you just know that that's the setup to a bad B film, really, you know.
Yeah, Croczilla.
Yeah. Or, you know, some sort of prequel thing. It just sounds like the setup to Godzilla or something along those lines. A French Godzilla. I don't know how that would sound without it making sound horribly racist.
Well, you know, is it the 1998 Godzilla movie?
1997.
The one that I love, but I'm not.
The one with the most memorable song in it, which is
Going Deeper Underground.
No, there's that one. I was gonna say Puff Daddy and his version of Oh god, he ripped off.
I remember this. I remember the video to it too.
Oh my god, it's called Come With Me, but he ripped off. Oh my god, I hate myself. Led Zeppelin. Don't know why I couldn't remember Led Zeppelin. Cashmere.
You remember Puff Daddy?
Yeah, I know. That's terrible. That's really ruined any sort of credibility of me having knowledge of rock music. But yes, that was what was the thought? Is you going to say it's because in the start of that film they do French atomic tests?
I'm pretty sure that in 1997's Godzilla, because it's different. Godzilla was always intended to be a metaphor for
nuclear weapons.
Yeah, I don't believe he was a radiated lizard originally. He certainly consumes, recycles and reuses radiation because that's the source of his atomic breath. But I believe in the 1997 version, he is. They're testing nuclear weapons in French Polynesia.
Yeah.
Sacré bleu.
And weirdly, there's just green iguanas there.
Yes, that was very strange. A feral population, I assume.
Of course.
Yeah. Is in this new, the new one is a little bit, the new kind of timeline of Godzilla is a bit more in line with the classics, and I believe it was Bikini Atoll where they
that's South Pacific as well.
Yeah, they weren't testing though, were they? They were luring him out. I mean, I don't want to say too much because I know they're exploring it in this series Monarch, which is really good if you've got Apple TV. Really good series.
But here's a random fact for you that connects two very odd things that you wouldn't necessarily assume to be in the same thing. Do you know that SpongeBob is supposed to be set at Bikini Atoll?
I did not know that.
Well, where does SpongeBob live? Other than in a pineapple under the sea.
That's as far as I know. I don't know anything about SpongeBob SquarePants, and I feel quite blessed.
I'm going to join you with that one, Aaron.
The name of the town, or the name of the place where he lives, is Bikini Bottom. and it's been sort of low-key confirmed that that is the seabed next to Bikini Atoll, which might explain why all of the fish are wandering around driving cars and the sponges are making burgers. So you never
radiation.
Know.
Ah,
and
okay.
Squirrel.
There's a squirrel. Yeah.
A bit of canonicity to.
Yeah.
To
so
SpongeBob.
Technically, we
it's
could
part
see
of the Godzilla verse.
We could see SpongeBob turn up to fight Godzilla, which I'd love to see.
No,
we're just next to Trop Aquaria now. If you look, you can see the radio masts.
Yeah. Well, are we filming as well?
We're not filming, no.
So how are they going to look?
I was talking to you.
Ladies and gentlemen,
if you
we
picture,
have reached our peak.
Picture in your mind's eye. It's a podcast, Aaron.
Oh, it's got some rooks there.
I tell him to look at the radio tower as he looks at the rooks.
No, I have been in their car park.
Yeah.
Can't remember why, but I never went in.
No, it's a really good place. Although they don't have it anymore. They used to have the most terrifying puppet experience you could go and see.
Oh, I don't know. Watermouth Castle has some pretty
terrifying
stuff. And there's also a little bit of propaganda in that place.
Oh dear. So we're coming up on the town of Blue Anchor, which is directly next to Watcher.
I also think that up ahead might be the fort that I was talking about. The Bronze Age Fort. Watch it. We're in Watch It.
Watch it.
Watch it.
So, I mean, they make it nice and obvious that you're in or next to the town of Blue Anchor. There's a massive Blue Anchor as you drive in. But this is also a town which I quite like. As we were saying about Lego, there is a shop here that does like secondhand and old sets of Lego on the...
Is there?
Yeah. Dangerous, I know.
I did not know this. This is totally new information.
So I have occasionally, I don't know if it's still here, it's been a while since I've been down here, but there is also a fantastic statue to the Tale of the Old Mariner.
Yeah, I saw that when I was looking up Watch It a little while ago, but I've never looked into it really. I looked into
it's about a man who kills an albatross, but then he has it hanging around his neck for the rest of his life to basically remind him of the fact that he'd murdered an albatross.
That's actually, I like that story. There's a little bit of nature vengeance there.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to pick a bird to murder, why would you pick one that's that large?
Can I just add a random thing here? I keep seeing, because obviously it is the season, or
it's
the season
not,
tis
it's
approaching.
November.
The season tis approaching, shall we say. I keep seeing, like, you know, Santa's sleigh with reindeer on it. They've all got antlers. So it's just a good moment to remind everyone that if reindeer have antlers at this time of year, they're girls.
Very much so. What happens if they have red noses?
Oh, actually, that is a real thing.
Is it?
Yes. So reindeer... I got really excited there. I think I mentioned this in my reindeer creature feature for Christmas last time.
A couple of years ago now,
yeah. So reindeer have a lot of blood vessels in their nose, and they use it for heat control. And when they need to get rid of excess heat, these blood vessels they're flushed with blood, warm blood to help them thermoregulate, and their noses actually do turn pink. But there isn't a Rudolph in Santa's thing. There's no Rudolph. It's Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner, Blitzen, and Donner and Blitzen come from the words Dunder and Blitzen, which are German for thunder and lightning. I can go on and on about Santa's reindeer. I love the idea of Father Christmas and all that.
Well, since we've been talking, we've arrived.
There's a Union Jack with a smiley face.
I know, that's quite.
There's very few places in the world where the Union Jack is.
I think that would actually work as a new version of the flag. I'd be quite happy with that. Could change it depending on the national mood. Instead of having flags at half mast, you just change the emoji face on it.
Can be called Jack.
Yeah, there you go. We're currently looking at a flag with a Union Jack which has a massive smiley face in the middle, which I think, yeah, should definitely be the UK's new flag. Why not?
The cheek, the absolute unmitigated gall of putting a smiley on the Union Jack and not the dragon from the Welsh flag. That's outrageous.
Anyway, Right, well, we're now going to hit the beach, as it were. It's lovely, it's cloudy, it's slightly rainy.
Totally bikini weather.
Everything you think of when you think the beach. And hopefully the recording will go okay from this point on, because we won't have the lovely sort of sound booth that is the car. We're going to have the smaller microphone with us whilst we record, and we'll try and get some video of all of this as well. And let's see what we find, and then we can talk about what we found on the way back.
This part of the podcast is sponsored by GoPro.
I wish.
Right, well, future Gareth here, editing Gareth. Unfortunately, the part of this episode that should have been the sound of us on a beach, picking up rocks, hammering them open, finding a few couple of fossils and things like that, didn't go as well as we'd hoped. In fact, I'm going to insert here a piece of the audio so you can hear just how poorly this hole went. So yeah, as you can hear, that was the wonderful sound of my bag, or the inside of my bag. So we had a good hour and a half worth of audio of the inside of my bag. So this experiment went a little awry. However, you are here with myself and Paris.
Hello.
Just to, well, basically recap what we did actually do. So, well, I mean, we set off along the beach itself. It's quite a nice beach, Watchet Beach, in that you have to go up and over a series of steps that are carved into the rock and then concreted on the other side. It acts as sort of the breakwater almost for Watchet Beach itself. And then following along there, you've got quite boggy sand, wouldn't you say? Or it's almost like sponge that you walk along. Yeah, it's a very odd thing to walk along the sand on that part of the beach. And then above that line, above the strand line, is where you start to come across all the rocks. As we started to move along that way, you get to the specific point that we were looking for, which is where you have the two different rock layers meet, and you actually see quite a distinctive line of colour in the rock change from this almost terracotta red sandstone to a grey clay almost.
You're not making it sound very nice. It was really pretty.
No, it is.
Seeing the changes and the streaks and things.
And that's because you've got two different time periods meeting, basically. Like we said in the beginning, the Rhaetian Panarth series. So it's the border between the Triassic and the Jurassic periods. And we were basically at that point. You can find fossils in both, but most of the time it's in the sort of the grey sandstone and clay that you find stuff. So most of the way, I think the first fossil that we came across was an ammonite, quite a large one. Mm-hmm. There are some really, really big ones there. However, they are not takeable for a couple of reasons. The first one being that they are massive and it would take
larger than your average dinner plate.
Yeah, they were sort of car tire size, and that's not including all the rock and matrix around them. So you'd find it really hard to move them off the beach. The other reason is most of them are quite worn, and that wearing obviously means that the fossil itself wouldn't really be of any particular use in prepping. So it's it becomes a little bit of a just have a look at them and then keep
part
on
the
going.
Scenery.
Yeah, and it's a
you
good
get your
marker.
Eye in a little bit more as well. You can see what you're looking for.
I see them as a bit of a good marker to you're getting into where the fossils are. What we did also see an awful lot of was giant clam fossils, about the same size as your hand. And these turn up in this specific area of geological time quite a bit just in this area. So they're really nice fossils. I've got one of them that we've used in the past because it was in a nice sort of almost football-sized block.
Is that the one we sort of used as a doorstop?
We used it as a doorstop, yeah.
Sacrilege.
No. It's a very nice block of sandstone, and it has a nice big shell at the top of it, so it's not going to get damaged or anything. We don't use it as a doorstop anymore. It's sort of away for the moment so that the child doesn't play with it.
Smash its face on it. Yeah, knock it over.
But you've also got a variety of other small shells, things like what are called devil's toenails, which are basically the earlier ancestors to today's oysters. And you can actually see a nice progression. If you were to line up all the different members of that family going back from the early Triassic right the way through till modern day, you can see the change in their shells to the sort of almost flat oyster shells that we have today, from what are these curled ones, which are often called devil's toenails, because it was thought by the Victorians and people before that, they were the devil's toenail cuttings just left lying on the beach in a rock. Yeah. as we sort of continued on, we found one or two other bits and pieces, two largish blocks that we took a look at, but they were nothing more than shells. There was one very interesting one, which I can't for the life of me figure out what it was, and I'm suspecting it's either smashed shells that created almost this very weird sort of pattern in the rock. And sometimes when you do get things like that, it's a case of it's a smashed piece of bone or a smashed piece of shell or even wood. And what's happened is it's worn out at a different angle. So you get almost like a CAT scan, like a cutting. So it gives an odd impression of the shape to what you're looking at. So, yeah, there's a few different bits and pieces that were unidentifiable. But unfortunately, all of that audio, as you heard before, was pretty rubbish. However,
Not all of the audio.
One of the only things that really did pick up out of all of the audio, and mind you, this is me standing a good 5 meters away from him with the recording equipment, just recording from the inside of my bag, unfortunately, as opposed to recording off the lapel mic that I had on, was Aaron farting.
His eructation from his bottom.
So much so that it was loud enough that it could be heard a good 5 meters away, and you were even further away, a good 10 meters away.
Possibly more.
And and yeah, I think, I mean, we'll
insert that footage here.
If that comes up on the audio, I'm keeping it in. That's going to be at the end of the episode.
Well, we'll insert that sound here to the point where I think it almost off-balanced you and you fell over shortly after this.
Yes. I am still wounded.
Yeah. It is a bit of a boulder field, basically, so it is quite hard moving around sometimes, and you slipped and fell over.
I don't think it would have been bad if I didn't have the recording equipment, but where I was trying to save the GoPro and a few other items I had, it meant, unfortunately, I damaged myself a little bit.
You're still around, you're still walking.
Yeah, I'm still walking. You're fine. Walking wounded, didn't got to chop anything off, thankfully.
Yeah. So, you have this weird moment of Aaron making the loudest possible sound he could without speaking, you falling over and going, ah, and then the whole place going silent as we both scrambled over to find you and pick you back up. Thankfully not wedged between any rocks or anything. So, yeah, after that, we sort of started to head back because you were in a bit of pain and... It was getting close to the point where we were going to have to call it anyway. So yeah, it turned out to be a slightly, well, not the ideal version of how we'd have liked to have done this. And our first experiment out doing an audio version of these things, we will, I think, try and do the next one video so that you can at least see these things. See the look on everyone's face as Aaron manages to clear a beach with one sound. See the disappointment on our faces as well when we look at a rock and realise, oh, no, there wasn't actually anything in that one. So we didn't come away with a gigantic amount, but we will be doing this again, definitely.
I feel like for a first-time visit, it was relatively successful. Despite the setbacks, it gave us an idea of what to look for, what to expect in future, and what, you know, hopefully feedback from you guys to tell us what you want from us next time as well.
Speak for yourself. I've been there loads of times. Normally, when I go there, it's definitely hit or miss. Sometimes you can find everything, sometimes you can find nothing. And then this time we found an injury and a sound that, yeah, will reverberate through time.
We will not be using it as our text tones.
But, yeah, I'm sure that we will be doing this again. Annoyingly, like I say, it did not work, the audio. But we like to think that we've given you a bit of a wander through what was going on, and just hearing us as we drive there, I think it was a nice little ramble. So we'll now go back to us as we get back in the car for the return journey.
Yes, we're back.
We'll cut that out.
We're back in the car. We're on our way back. With a good 20 minutes there before we started recording of Aaron's full up diagnosis from him being off ill
the other week.
So we now know literally the ins and outs and what came out.
It was definitely out.
Better out than in.
Oh dear. But it's a road trip, that's always what happens. You end up with awful stories like that.
Gross stories.
So yeah, we've just passed what was the hill fort that you were saying about, Aaron. You pointed that out. Is it Iron Age Hillfort?
Iron Age, yeah.
Like the one in Barnstable?
Yeah.
Yeah. So just outside of the library in Barnstable is an Iron Age Hillfort. It's really quite steep, but it's really quite impressive if you're there and you go up it. It's
The fort's not there anymore, is it?
No, but it's just
it
a big hill.
That mount. But another interesting point about that area outside the library there is I believe they found 200 or more Saxon bodies buried there.
Been for a night out in Barnstable, have they?
Yeah, or had kebab afterwards.
Ah.
Died mysteriously, vomiting. Disappeared the same way I did.
Oh dear.
Oh, well, it all goes full circle, this conversation.
We've managed to find a few bits and pieces whilst on the beach.
Yeah.
We're going to get some of them looked at by slightly more knowledgeable people than we are, who've got more knowledge on being able to pick things out from smaller amounts. You're still with us, Paris, after your fall?
Yeah, I had a bit of ground inspection time.
You all right?
Yeah, all fine. A bit bruised, but nothing seems that broken, so I think we're good. I saved the GoPro.
Oh, well, that's all that matters, apparently.
So the bits that Gareth's talking about, I lugged back two heavy blocks. They both got bits that we don't really know.
I'm sort of about 60-70% sure.
One of them
that
is
bone.
Yeah.
And the other one, I mean, it's definitely something like a shell or a bone. One of the two. We'll find out on closer inspection, I think.
And then I also have two smaller blocks, probably about the size of two of my fists, I reckon. One is that lovely kind of plate that had all the fossilized shells.
That's quite a nice piece, yeah.
And the other one is the one that had that broken clamshell, the one that had been crushed. That looked quite pretty, so I've taken that home. And if I can, I might try and do some prep work on it, because I've not prepped many fossils.
Well, like I was saying whilst we were on the beach, the actual rock itself that encases most of these fossils is ridiculously hard.
Mm.
So I think you'll struggle. It's not going to be an easy one to do.
On that subject, Gareth. So we were talking a little bit because I brought a tape measure in my pocket, which the whole point of it was I knew that we would find big ones that we weren't going to be able to take back. So I brought this tape measure out so that when we took the photos, I could have a measurement of it.
What did you do with the tape measure?
I left it in my pocket, forgot that I had it, even though it was in my pocket. So that was rather irritating. But on that subject, related to what we were just talking about, what tools do we reckon are good for coming down to do some fossil hunting?
Right, first off, you're probably looking at, obviously you've got to have the right footwear, something that is not going to make you fall over. A good coat. You want it to be warm. You'll probably find that you end up getting to a point where you want to take the coat off because you're probably getting too hot, depending on the day.
Mm. Layers are good.
Yeah, always dress for colder weather, especially in the UK. You want to have, first off, you want to have a tide times chart, so you know what tide times are before you even venture out the door. Mm. There's no point going just before the tides are about to change.
Unless it's a good place to get some food.
Yeah. And then you go to the food and then you wait, yeah. So yeah, it was a good knowledge of the location as well. That's where there's lots of different websites that work quite well. So UKGE is quite a good one. They've got location guides throughout the UK.
And that was another thing I was going to ask you, but since you've brought it up, UKGE is where you can find the local rules for the beaches. Because one thing we spoke about on the beach was, we're talking about getting things out of rock and how you are allowed to in some places and not allowed to in other places. And I innocently enough brought my chisel, and rules aren't always as obvious as I think they should be, because you want to respect the land. So
it's more a case of there's nothing wrong with having all of that stuff in your bag to go with you. So you don't need to take a ton of equipment with you. I've got in my bag, I've got a little folding camping shovel.
Oh, yeah.
Which you'd use on like a sandy beach to dig things out, or if you're in like a field type area. But I just keep it in there because it's convenient. I've got a couple of brushes and a couple of little dentist tools for being able to get to like really fine stuff. Just basically like a little metal pick. And then I think most people would call it a brick hammer. But a geology hammer, which is just got a flat hammer end and a like a pick end, that's really useful for just general purpose. I mean, I have at home a big sledgehammer, which if you're going after large blocks on beaches where you know that you can take large pieces, which in the past I've done with other people where we've gone and we've ended up bringing back quite a large piece that would have come from an even larger slab to then prepare. And the other thing to carry with you is a newspaper. It's about the only good use for the Sun or the Daily Mail, realistically. Although I'll tell you what used to be even better is the Argos catalogue, which anyone in the UK will know what that is. It used to be basically a catalogue that you'd get given as you walked in the front door of Argos, which is this odd shop where you pick what you want out of a catalogue and then go and tell the person the number of what you want, and then they bring it to you. You don't go and look at it in a shop. They just bring it out from behind the magic curtain. But the Argos catalogue used to be a nice, big, thick, chunky paper book. But they've stopped doing them now. It's all, you know, you can go and look at it online. But the Argos catalogue used to be perfect for that because you could just tear out chunks. Even better was each one of the sections in there was color-coded, like the pages were color-coded. So you could...
ammonites in one color.
Yeah, you could basically color-code what you found on the day. Masking
really
tape, that's a good one for, you know, taping everything up. And if you're going for really small stuff, you want to take a couple of little sample pots or little Tupperwares or something that you can put things into. Take a good meal with you, unless you're going to go to something like a pub afterwards for a nice lunch. Hat, sunglasses,
first aid kit,
definitely
sun lotion, water bottle,
any of those sort of, you know, obvious things that you'd take with you on an outdoor hike.
I will put a list of this on when I do a next location thing, including what you will need and what we feel we should have had today and maybe didn't have,
as in what we should have found. Yes, we should have definitely found following. But just, it's
common sense things. You're not going to be taking giant rocks off a beach. You're not going to be hacking away at a cliff, because those are just silly things that are not going to amount to anything. The amount of times I've gone fossil hunting and seen people just sitting there 2 seconds outside of a car park just bashing rocks with a hammer. The biggest thing that you can take with you is knowledge. And probably the most important thing you can take with you is knowledge. Information on where the fossils are found, so you can get some really good guides. Go on a guided walk for the first couple of times. There's loads of different places that do guided walks. You won't necessarily get to fossil hunt as much as you wanted to, but
you'll get the information you need to go again another time.
You'll get a feel of the area, you'll get to know what it's like.
Get your eye in.
Did you mention Tupperware?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Don't be disappointed if you don't find anything. So we didn't find very much today. There have been days where I've walked away with some absolutely amazing finds, and then days where I've walked away with nothing.
That's part of the thrill of the hunt, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You don't know what you're going to get, if you're going to get anything, so...
Yeah, you may find the most stunning fossil. They usually find the people who walk away with, you know, giant pliosaur skulls and things like that are either very lucky, or they live around that area and they do it every single day, because they're going to the same spot every single day and waiting for those storms or for the sea to have washed bits away.
Mm.
But if you're doing it just recreationally every now and again, it's kind of potluck. It's what you might find on the day might be amazing, it might not. But it's still a good day out in the outdoors. You've got a bit of fresh air. All that sort of stuff. Right, well, we're on our way back now. We're winding our way back over Exmoor, back towards dropping Aaron off. And we're then going to disappear ourselves. So, well, it seems like a good point to end everything on. So, for a New Year's episode, I think this has done rather well, don't you, Aaron?
Yeah, it's been a good one. It's enjoyable to get out and about and do it, and it'd be nice to do more of it.
Yeah, well, I think we definitely will.
We can do with Patreon support.
Exactly. In fact, this is, yeah, one of those things that's directly been aided by our Patreon backers, which it's that point in the show. Aaron, would you like to shout out our Patreons?
I will do.
For the final time this year?
For the final time this year, thank you very, very much to the continued support of our lovely Patreon members. Connie P, Chelsea McKee, Jennifer Greenhall, and Fogtober. Cannot tell you how much your support means, how much the support of everyone who listens means and follows us, but especially you guys, because you guys make trips like this possible, and it means, like, your added support means that we can do more, and hopefully 2024 we'll see more Patreons join us and we'll be able to afford to do even more stuff. We've got some exciting things on the horizon, so thank you very, very much.
And keep in mind as well that, remember, what was the promise that you put in place?
If we get 10 Patreons by my birthday, which is the end of January, then I will, January 25th, if anyone wants to send any birthday wishes, birthday presents, Tyrannosaurus skulls, beasts of the Mesozoic things. Kidding. Yeah, if we can get 10 Patreons by the end of January, I will wrap the Patreon roll call.
I mean, I can understand why no one wants to in that sense.
Not good at rapping.
Aaron's wish list is available on Amazon.
This is an exercise in embarrassing myself, I think. But I will do it.
For the Patreons. Right, well... Yeah, that pretty much brings us to the end of this episode and the end of this episode for this year. So we will be back in the new year and a whole load of new creature features and people to talk to about everything and anything wild and weird in the natural world. But that pretty much brings us to the end of this year. So a big thank you from everyone here, and Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year. bye.
Bye.
Adios.
So, Bob?
Yes.